You guys want to hear my Peggy Lee impersonation?
Who's Peggy Lee?
Who's Peggy Lee?
Yeah.
All right, you'll find out soon enough. But before then, let me get some of these. But on the beat. All right, one, two, three. Yeah. He's a tramp, but I love him. Breaks a new heart every day. He's a tramp, but I love him. And I hope he's gonna stay that way. Very good, guys. Hey.
It's the hoe anthem of the 1950s.
It really is. Also, Peggy Lee is known for singing, he give me fever. Let's do it again.
What?
In the morning, fever when he hold me tight. Do you know that song?
Never heard of it.
Well, Peggy Lee is a big part of the 1955 version of the film that we were talking about today. Well, actually, do you know a little bit about that history? She actually is credited for something we'll talk about when we discuss The Lady and the Tramp. The 1955 musical film, and the 2019 Disney Plus original remake.
I just want to say musical film is a bit of a
it's being too stretch. It could be, yes. Well, I am Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality. How are you guys today?
Good.
Good. Yeah. Tired, you know, tired. Just working out.
Yeah, it was a Thanksgiving weekend, long weekend.
It was, and you got to make sure you burn off those calories.
Yes.
Especially when someone's trying to fit into a tuxedo, you know.
Well, it is officially the month of December, and 'tis the season of giving. Whatever your nationality, whatever the holiday you celebrate, it's just that kind of, it's that month. 'Tis the season of giving. And a big way that you can show your love of giving is by giving us some love on Instagram, Facebook, wherever you can find us on any social media platform or anywhere you listen to podcasts. And how can they show us some love, Rolando?
You can find us on Instagram. Our handle is Remakes, Reboots, Revivals. You can also send us emails. Our email is remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
That's right.
And if you search for Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals, we'll be the first ones to show up on Facebook. And our Twitter account is Remakes Podcast.
Yes. But yeah, so today we are discussing a Walt Disney classic film, the 15th animated film of the Disney canon, Lady and the Tramp. Did you guys watch this movie growing up, or did you watch it just recently for the first time?
No. I used to watch it growing up. Yeah, we had it on tape, and I remember playing it a lot, but it was never one of my favorite movies. I think my sister loved it because they were dogs.
I didn't really watch this movie growing up.
Interesting, really?
Yeah, I watched more of the Aristocats. I'm a cat girl.
Yeah, no. Yeah. The Aristocats, I think I watched once, and I never want to see again.
But it's got Zsa Zsa Gabor.
So?
I mean, come on.
Well, how does that appeal to, like, a young guy, a kid?
A young gay kid? Yeah. Should I love the Gabors.
I wouldn't know who Zsa Zsa Gabor is until, late into my teens.
And do you like her now? Do you appreciate the Gabors?
I don't even know who she is still.
You would love the Gabors. I think you would love the Gabors. Sisters. She's from, do you know Green Acres?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm just showing my age here.
Or your love of ancient things.
You're younger than me.
Yeah.
All things.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. But yeah, so we're talking about the 1955 Lady and the Tramp. This is a film that came out while Walt Disney was still alive, right after, by 2 years, Peter Pan, and a full 4 years before Sleeping Beauty. So this is kind of the era in which Disney created this film.
Oh, interesting. So Sleeping Beauty was that late?
Yes.
I thought Sleeping Beauty was like the third or fourth.
No. The third or fourth was Dumbo and Bambi, Pinocchio, like those movies.
Oh.
And then during the war in the 40s, they made a bunch of package musicals, Three Caballeros, Fun and Fancy Free, Melody Time. And then they came back in 1950 with Alice in Wonderland. It was like Disney's back, top of the game. Because these package musicals didn't fare as well as like Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs did.
Mm-hmm.
And believe it or not, by the time Lady and the Tramp came out in 1955, This was the highest grossing Disney film after Snow White. I think it grossed almost as much as Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs did.
Really?
Yeah, so it was a big success for Disney.
That's interesting.
Not critically, but an audience favorite.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, in 1955, you had a lot of different options when you went to the movies. You could go see Mr. Roberts with an all-star man cast, Henry Fonda, James Cagney. You can go see the musical version of Oklahoma. That was the fourth highest grossing film of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Roberts was the second. Guys and Dolls with Marlon Brando. Luck be a lady tonight. You know, his fame. I love Guys and Dolls. By the way, if I was like ever to be like a proponent of a musical film remake that like kind of needs it, I would say Guys and Dolls. I would love to see Guys and Dolls remade. Ending it there. And at seven. Actually, number one is a movie that you're gonna love this. The highest grossing film of 1955 was Cinerama Holiday. Because this was the period where TV was starting to infiltrate the public's life, mm-hmm. right? People weren't really going to the movies, so they had to come up with gimmicks. And they came up with CinemaScope and Cinerama. Completely different ways of like really wide projections.
Oh.
That like encourage you to want to go. And Cinerama Holiday was just about this couple who went on vacation to Europe. So you got to like see the world in like a big thing. So it was like this, you know, it was kind of like an event.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a completely forgotten film now. But in 1955, highest grossing film.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lady and the Tramp.
I always love 1950s history.
When Lady and the Tramp came out in June of 1955, this was very much the CinemaScope era. This movie was released in CinemaScope, which is before then, I think the aspect ratio, oh man, exactly what it was probably like 1:72:1, but CinemaScope was 2:66:1. And that was what's, and if, I don't know if like you remember some DVDs that you would watch of old 50s movies. I don't know how often you did that.
Never.
I did.
You did? Mm-hmm. But if you ever put on like Ben-Hur or something or Ten Commandments,
right.
And you're like, why is it so thin?
Yeah.
You know, it's because it was meant to be seen on like a really long screen that like you would like kind of look both ways at.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was like a new thing. And this is how Lady and the Tramp was made.
Mm-hmm.
Lady and the Tramp was based on a Cosmopolitan magazine story called Happy Dan the Cynical Dog by an author named Ward Green.
Mm-hmm.
And they adapted it pretty loosely into the story that we know as Lady and the Tramp.
Right. I think all that remained was the Cocker Spaniel and the dog named Tramp.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. And the story of Lady and the Tramp is there is a female American Cocker Spaniel named Lady who lives with an upper class family. And so it's not even like a city that we know.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like America. It's supposed to be like almost nostalgic to like Disney's like youth.
Main, like any main street.
Yes,
any,
exactly.
Yeah. And then a male stray mutt called the Tramp. And Lady, after the birth of a child into her family household, as she is feeling of being neglected by her owners, meets the Tramp and goes on a bunch of adventures on the streets of their town. And well, yeah, just like the lives of the dogs. She did, yeah. Technicalities of the story.
Big technicality here.
But that's kind of like the long and short of it. Lady is played by Barbara Luddy, a name we are not familiar with. And I don't think she did much after this.
I was going to say, she's like, I've never heard of her.
Yeah, I mean,
but you can name me any 1950s damsel, and I'm like, who?
That's true. Grace Kelly.
Oh, I know Grace Kelly.
Okay.
She was the Princess of Monaco, right?
Yes, she was the Princess of Monaco.
Yeah, see, mm-hmm. I know that.
Okay.
It's so funny. I know her more so from like the geopolitical standpoint, not, I don't know anything she's done movie-wise.
But you don't know Peggy Lee.
I don't know Peggy. Peggy Lee?
Peggy Lee.
No, I did not know Peggy Lee.
No, Peggy Lee. All right. Well, you might know Barbara Luddy from some other Disney movies. She played Meriwether in Sleeping Beauty, and she was Rover in 101 Dalmatians. So she was a radio actress.
She played a male?
Mm-hmm.
Rover?
Yeah, she was a radio actress. Oh, so her voice.
Who the hell was Rover? I don't even know who Rover was. I mean, I'm sure Mary Lee, you said?
Meriwether.
That's one of the...
The fairies.
The fairies, yeah. So, I don't know what color.
She is the blue one. She's the pudgy, small blue one who like kind of messes up a lot. So that's Barbara Luddy. And Larry Roberts plays the Tramp. Don't really know much about him.
What's his name?
His name was Larry Roberts.
Oh, I actually liked his voice.
Yeah, I think they were both great voice actors.
I did not like Lady.
You didn't like Lady. I loved
So I can tell you this. I've seen this movie so many times growing up. Mm-hmm. I hate Lady.
Wow. Okay. Big statement to make. I mean, but I also feel like the voice fit the character. A privileged, sheltered dog.
It's so funny. Know? Like, just I had to rewatch this movie recently.
Uh-huh.
And obviously for the podcast. But I, for some reason, I had in my head that they were like British, everyone, for some reason. She's got a little bit of a... rewatching the movie, I'm just like, wait, they're not British. What's going on?
It's also maybe the transatlantic like quality in her voice. Maybe. It's, you know, it's also
the style. I'm like assuming this. I thought it was like old Victorian ages.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was older than it was. So,
yeah. Turns out it takes place in 1909.
1909.
Turn of the century.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you what's going on historically from a historic perspective.
Well, this is pre-World War One.
Yes, it's pre-World War One. So that I could tell you.
Yeah. And we're still like building our cities and stuff, mm-hmm. even though these cities and these episodes, these
right before the Roaring Twenties,
built, yeah, the Industrial Age, which was the 1910s. In the industrial, yeah, right age. Before it,
probably. I don't know.
Well, the big name in this movie is Peggy Lee. Peggy Lee plays Darling, the owner of Lady, and she also plays the one stray cat. I mean, dog. Who was Peg? I think just named after
Peggy
her.
Or Peg.
Peg or Peggy, and she played one of the two cats, Cy and Am, like in Siam.
Yeah, she played which one?
I think she played
Sai. Did it matter? Or did she just duplicate her voice?
I think she played both, yeah.
She might have played both,
I think she did both, yeah. Well, also Peggy Lee contributed to the songwriting of these songs.
Oh, did she?
She did.
Oh.
She was a big singer, like we said. She had Fever and other songs. She was known for her sultry voice. She's one of my absolute favorite jazz singers of the era.
Oh.
I adore her voice.
He's a tramp, but they love him. Breaks a new heart every day.
So yeah, so they got her. I don't know why they were like, this movie needs Peggy Lee, but they got her and she created the songs. Whether or not you like them or not, it's Peggy Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this movie doesn't have, I think, a lot of standout songs other than He's a Tramp and
Bella Notte.
Bella Notte.
Oh, this is the night. It's a beautiful night. And we call it Bella Notte.
There's other songs. The Siamese cats have a song.
Oh, we're going to talk about
that. We're going to talk about that. There's What is a Baby? So
which
a
isn't a song. It's like spoken word.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a poem.
Yeah. It's again, I hate Lady so much.
And the song, well, then when they hold the baby, la 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 la.
Yes,
that song. So
that's
yeah.
not really again.
It's like a lullaby. All right, wait. So why do you hate definitions. Lady?
Why do I hate Lady?
Yeah. What did she do?
I just never like. I guess I just don't like cocker spaniels.
Okay. Oh, she was drawn so adorable
as a puppy, but then you can just see like kind of how stuffy she is when she grows up. Her long floppy ears.
Her stuffy.
And, like, she's very. I feel like she's very condescending. Yes.
She's enamored by her humans.
You say that about Bobby, your actual dog.
And he is the most condescending dog I've ever met. Okay.
I can't even think of one moment in where I felt anything near to this dog is condescending.
The way she looked down on Tramp.
Did she really look like she was a sheltered dog? I keep trying to say cat. I'm a cat person, so I'm sorry about that. But like, she was a sheltered dog, was like told about these dogs from her other dog friends who were like, you don't want to talk to those dogs.
And also, I just feel like it wasn't she's her so fault. Whiny.
She was young. How
oh my
she
God.
Whiny?
She just whines all the time. It's just like, my humans don't like me.
They're her life.
What is a baby? I don't know.
She
just
was very
never,
nice to the baby.
Never, never cared for Lady. I did like Tramp, and actually rewatching the movie reminded me how much I liked Tramp.
I felt like the Tramp was like a stereotypical, like, hey, you know, like that song, The Wanderer. Oh, I'm the type of guy who likes to roll around. Like, I feel like Tramp is like that song.
He's a vagabond. He's a fuckboy.
He is a fuckboy. He's fuck cool. Boy. Yeah. Well, he's a tramp, and like, apparently he breaks hearts.
He breaks
this
hearts.
This dog is a fucking player. Also, side note, the Peggy Lee dog just looks like a heroin addict and just like been, you know, just around the block too many times.
She's seen. She's lived a life.
I was like, in 1955, like, they're just going straight for it, man.
She just, like, has a snaggle or two, just yeah. the eye makeup.
Uh-huh. What a dog.
Yeah.
Crazy. I disagree. I think Lady's... I love Lady. I think she's a great character.
I just want to go back to Peg. Peg is definitely, like, the booty call girl that, like, Tramp would hit up.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah, not the settled down dog.
No,
that's
no,
a lady.
No. Yeah. Not Peg.
like I said, I disagree. And I
so
do.
So you like Lady?
I do. I actually, so the movie gives me a lot of anxiety because I love animals, especially domestic ones, because I've had dogs mm-hmm. and cats in my life. So whenever I see animals that I resonate with and, you know, can relate to in my own life, I get a lot of anxiety for them.
How can you relate to Lady? How is Lady relatable?
I can relate to Lady in terms of the dogs in my life. like my sister's dogs who I used to live with, and how they, you know, now that Sophia, my niece, has been born, you know, I feel like they might feel neglected and I feel sad for them. And then if, God forbid, they were ever on the streets, and how much it would kill me and the anxiety that I felt knowing they're out there, fair, what they would go through, stuff like that.
I don't know. I just feel like Lady was so privileged. I
didn't know she's a dog.
Clearly didn't know this growing up, obviously, like this idea of like privilege, but it's rewatching. I'm just like, ugh. Let's be real. If she were a little older, she'd be a grade eight stuck up. Oh, I can say this, bitch. She's a dog.
It's nice to know that your standards for humans apply to dogs too.
Of course, because these are, and not they're, I guess they're anthropological,
anthropomorphic. Yeah.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're giving them like qualities of like humans, you know, and apparently these dogs have a very, very rich culture which condemns premarital sex, because, you know, the two dogs, Trusty and Jock, are ready to marry her, being like, a woman having a baby out of wedlock, we must save her.
I'm being a little bit nicer to her because she's a dog, a sheltered, beautiful, well-mannered, polite dog.
Also a tramp.
No, she's not a tramp.
She put
a tramp
out on the first night, okay? She's technically the first Disney character, and I think the only one today who has had premarital sex.
Well, when they humanize them, and these dogs have moving mouths and stuff, but they're also cartoons. So things that can be implied don't necessarily hit home as much as they would with humans or with like live action.
Jock and Trusty were about to ask for her hand in marriage because she was in a very unfortunate situation, I think was their exact words. There's no reading between the lines on that one either, you know what I mean? Like, I maybe feel like reading it, you could read it as the fact that she was recently in the pound and this is her unfortunate situation. But no, they were ready to, like, take her in, despite the fact that they're both older dogs, because, like, they don't want to see a female dog in this situation, which is having having a children out of wedlock. A children, obviously, because, like, they're dogs.
Yeah.
They have litters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I guess you're right, because these are incredibly humanized dogs. This is one of those movies where they speak and they have interactions that are very close to humans, which I'm not the biggest fan of. Of course, they're going to do that in all Disney films. But I don't know. I guess I'm like more forgiving of the fact that they're animals. But I will say that
it's a love story, Nicole.
Yeah, like, I didn't
literally
like that
love
aspect
is not something that dogs really feel. And cats, they don't feel like, they feel love towards their masters. That's fine.
Yes.
But they don't feel love towards the other species. Like, all they're just doing is biological stuff with them.
No, they feel love towards one another. Dogs get attached to each other. Yes,
they can get
do.
Attached. It doesn't make it love.
I mean,
not love in like the human
not
sense.
Love
it's
in the
biological
human sense. It's just like attachment and getting used to people and feeling that, what we would describe as love, because at the end of the day, you get attached. And like, you move on from people when you break up.
Is that what you call me and Eddie Z's relationship, with just attached?
I call most human relationships that too. You guys have a really strong attachment. I'm jealous. But I don't know. I felt like the best things about Lady and the Tramp were actually like the depictions of what it is to be a dog and like her relationship with her humans and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, oh, Jim, darling, and dear. But once the love got into it, the film started to kind of lose it for me.
Speaking of Jim, darling, and dear, Jim Deere and darling.
Yeah, Jim Deere and darling.
Eddie is the one who actually opened my eyes to something I never realized.
What?
But that's actually not their names. That's just what she keeps hearing them call each other.
Did you not realize
that? No, did not know that until... Well, keep in mind, I used to watch this as a kid.
Oh. All
right? The subtext of that, like, escaped me. I'm so sorry that I was in, like, culture child.
I got that from, like, the first time I saw it when I was 14.
You said you saw it recently.
When I saw it for the first time when I was 14. I didn't grow up with it.
Yeah, I grew up with it. I was like, I must have been like 5 when the first time I watched it. So I was definitely before I was like 9 because I was living in the Bronx, and it's not until even rewatching this one, I guess I had in my head that their names are Jim Deere and Darling.
Mm-hmm.
That like Eddie was like, oh, I get it. Look, that's not their name. That's what she hears. So it was just like,
yeah,
it just kind of blew
your
mind.
Well, that's adorable. But yeah, those are not their names. But I like her relationship with them. I like the fact that we don't really see them. They're kind of like these. We just know their legs and their voices.
Yeah, you see, because like, that's what the dog sees. Yeah, you see their heads occasionally, but for the most part, is you're just seeing it from her point of view, which is legs.
And I thought if it would have been just an adventure film, had Lady just gone out and like met another dog friend and gotten onto all these misadventures, because you know, like she went through some unfortunate shit. It would have been a better film for me personally. Mm-hmm. I think that halfway through the film, it just kind of starts to lose it.
Wait, what part do you think it starts to lose it?
Because around the Bella Notte scene.
Oh, that's like literally the adventure.
Yes.
They're like in the middle of the adventure.
So the Bella Notte scene, you know, it's supposed to be romantic. Everyone knows the moment of like, the spaghetti and the meatball and everything. And it's like an iconic moment.
You still see that.
You still get the callbacks to it. Yeah. But I guess maybe it's also the fact that it's like so in our pop culture now that when I look at it, I'm like, this isn't romantic at all. They just met. They're dogs.
They had the meet cute moment.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And then he saves her with the help of a beaver. Bella Notte is after the beaver. She was in a muzzle. And he had to help her get out of the muzzle.
That's right.
And then he's escorting her home. But first, he's going to take her.
He's going to feed her. Dinner. Yeah.
And then he's going to bang her. Okay. That's also how I play now.
That's a, first of all, that's a great date. Save my life. Feed me. Fuck me.
Yeah. Didn't
Sounds
we just,
great.
Didn't we just recently do a podcast episode where we talked about like how high stakes stuff like that is what drives.
Yes.
Like,
the Terminator one. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes. But then that's also the thing. Sex and love is different.
Well, just
sometimes they go hand in hand, but
not
you can tell
animals, okay.
For animals, I would argue even more so. But I don't know. It's just for me, the film starts to lose it. I also thought that even though I complain that the film gives me a lot of anxiety, I feel like the scene from The Pound wasn't an accurate enough portrayal of what it is to, you know, like be a dog that's discarded and like done away with. Because like our relationship, I think they could have also hit a little bit home and like how we treat animals.
Mm-hmm.
And like the fact that, yeah, he's going through the one way door and he's going to be put down and stuff. But then like all of a sudden Lady she just leaves.
Well,
and like it's sad
movie,
enough.
Nicole.
Oh, people die in children's movies all the time.
Ooh, what?
There's always death
from the
in 1950s. Children's movies. Bambi's mom dies,
Bambi.
Gets shot by
but again,
a man.
It's an implied death. We don't see it. Same thing as was this death.
Actually, Walt Disney wanted that one dog to be killed at the end because Disney thinks for every laugh there should be a tear. That's like his motto. And like you should portray things like death to children so that they know that
it's
going to happen.
Are you talking about Trusty, that he thought Trusty should die?
Yeah.
I agree. Actually, so it's funny. Eddie apparently had never seen the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like showing it to him and he's just like, oh my God, he dies?
Did Trusty die?
Yeah.
And so I was just
like, no, come on.
And, but then surprise, he's alive. Let's talk about more racist representation that's in there, because we saw the Chihuahua.
We saw the Chihuahua.
And the Mexican.
Mm-hmm. And the English
Mexican
man.
Accent and the name for
I
his
mean,
sister.
All these dogs are different. There's a Scottish dog that lives next door.
Jock.
Jock. Who's definitely not played by a Scottish man. And then we have the biggest, most offensive part of this movie, the cats.
Oh my God, the cats.
The Siamese cats.
Siamese.
When Thailand was still referred to as Siam.
Ready? Let's sing. One, two, three.
We are Siamese, if you please. We are Siamese, if you don't please.
You know what? As racist as the depiction of the of Asians these cats are, that song is fucking good.
Yeah, I think it's
like that
totally
is a
okay
good
fine.
Fucking song.
Right? Those cats are assholes. Yeah. I think that that's an unfair portrayal of cats because cats are not assholes. They're lovely, warm creatures. And that aunt is probably one of the worst villains in any Disney movie.
Yeah, she really was terrible.
She was like unreasonably terrible. Just but that's also.
But that's cat people.
It was
for
accurate.
You.
That's not cat people. That is quintessential, just like blame it all on the dog. And that's also one of the big things that caused me anxiety. It was like, why can't, you know, too bad we can't understand. Just listen to her. She's barking. Follow her. Lead. Go, you know, like listen to this goddamn dog. But no, write her off as a monster. Yeah,
she's
I
a cat
hated
lady.
That aunt. Shut
this
up.
This is literally why.
You already made that joke.
She, I just also want to point out that, like, I guess the reason, like, this scene is also problematic, right? The Siamese cats is also because you just the way they're animated.
Yes.
They had the slant eyes.
They did, yeah.
And also keep in mind, like, they're technically, they're the other.
They are.
They are the only major other, because everyone else reads as white, despite the fact that they're dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But they all, let's be real, they all read, Jock is obviously white.
Yes.
Obviously, the only other character that I remember seeing who is not white is the Mexican one.
Yeah.
And he's just used as a joke.
Yeah.
So the same thing here goes with these Siamese cats. And keep in mind, like, this movie came out post-World War II.
Mm-hmm.
But we still had a lot of, like, anti-Asian policies in place.
No, despite
the
fact that
in 1952 is when the Congress had passed one of the early immigration acts.
Oh, yeah.
That would introduce quotas and stuff, right? It was supposed to push for Asians to, like, start, you know,
yeah,
being able to, like, immigrate here. But they were still, I mean, the way the code was written was still, not the code, the law was written,
yeah,
still presented itself to just, like, be hostile towards Asians. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, obviously, 10 years from World War II, you're still getting a lot of, obviously, you're still getting media culture, like, these anti-Asian stereotypes and stuff. And
yeah,
that's why this is particularly, I think, a dangerous scene. Problematic.
I mean, the 50s were not the best place in terms of political atmospheres. You know, this is the McCarthy era. Mm-hmm. This is when, like, the Crucible was written about, like, the fact that there's a hunt out for communists and anyone who just, like, thought differently, not even looked differently.
Oh, man, but that's such a good play.
It's one of the best. It's such a great, like, allegory of society because, you know, like, not only it's terrifying when you can't even, like, look at someone, when, like, someone who doesn't even think like you is, like, an enemy. So this is just the atmosphere of the 50s. This is when the nuclear family was being invented, you know, husband, wife, son, daughter, dog.
Mm-hmm.
And anything else was scary and different.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's problematic now. I don't think it came from a obviously bad place, but it's also, it's like, something that, like, was in the public consciousness that is, we can look at now and be like, that's obviously racism at play.
I agree with you. I don't think it came from a place of malice, yeah, but I do suspect that, like, that idea of the other still
played
a role in, like, this scene, despite the fact how good the song is, because the song is so good.
It's a pretty good song.
It's a good sequence.
It's also, yes, it is, because they just, yeah, ruin Lady in the song, pretty much, and the perception of her. But it was also very much at play in Hollywood at the time to give roles of other cultures to white people. That didn't really become a thing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
The most famous case being in 1960s Breakfast at Tiffany's, her landlord, Mr. Mushiashi or something, played by Mickey Rooney.
That's right, yes.
And, you know, even, like, The King and I, Rita Moreno was one of the Siamese. Yul Brynner was the King of Siam.
Mm-hmm.
Another representation of the same exact country.
And Rita Moreno is still technically an other.
Yes.
It's just the wrong other.
It's just, yeah. So it's, like, two types of wrong.
Yeah.
But it's just interesting, too, because, you know, the just to speak a little bit more about race in this country, the race war has usually been, like, white versus blacks, and, like, Latinos and Asian people just kind of get, like, lost in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, like, especially wrong when you have an Asian person not played by an Asian person and just being, like, completely neglected well into the 80s, mm-hmm, and stuff in this, yeah, country. So it's not one of the worst ones, like the Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's, a movie I love, but it, like, that's probably one of the worst portrayals by a white actor of these things. But
I think for Disney, it's pretty...
Even worse than, like, some of the Crows...
Oh, the Crows are pretty bad. I'm not saying it's the worst,
yeah,
but it's definitely one of the standouts.
Yeah.
I think the Crows actually might be more racist.
Yeah, I think they're up there. I mean...
Like, that's just straight up racism.
It's even like a sitcom thing where, you know, you make fun of a person and like stereotype their culture for laughs, for easy laughs.
You mean,
know?
Like Modern Family and Sofia Vergara's character.
And the Big Bang Theory and
other
stuff.
This is a problem that perpetuates the media because I think, obviously, these rooms are just full of white writers.
Yes.
So obviously, you're going to include a character, the token minority, but the token minority is usually introduced as the expense.
Yes.
As a simple butt of the jokes.
Yeah.
Oh,
Sophia would have got it.
Where this one, in this case, is just, like, really written as, like, the, again, it's just, man, I mean, the cats, like, are the reason, they're the catalyst for, like, all the problems that Lady will encounter later,
yes,
on.
Yes. Yeah. They're
including
the villains.
Premarital, I'm sorry, children out of wedlock.
So tell the audience who might not have seen this movie or forgotten this whole wedlock thing you're talking about.
So basically what happens is after the cats run amok in the Darling household, the owner of the cat, Aunt Sarah, her instinct person to blame, the person, the incident blame goes on the dog because she's not a dog person.
Yeah, right? Even though there's like things that cats can obviously climb that are broken that a dog can't.
Which is what makes it so much funnier. So she takes a dog to get a muzzle. And mm-hmm. when Lady gets her first muzzle, she runs off and like, you know, escapes into the city. Tramp saves her from like these other dogs in a great scene, actually, where like Tramp fights off like these three bigger dogs. It's supposed to like, you know, get like, let's be real, it's going to make Lady wet. I'm really sexualizing these poor dogs.
You really are.
So anyway, so after that, like, he's going to try to help her get home. And but first he wants to help her get the muzzle off. He enlists the help of a beaver at the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And then from
a euphemism for the sex that they're going to have later.
A beaver in a cage? A chastity belt, I guess? Sure. You know?
Yeah.
I think you're reading a little too much into that.
Oh, I'm reading a little too much.
Sorry. All right. And it's followed by, you know, the two of them. Oh, so here's a part also where, like, kind of Tramp is kind of showing her the ways of the street, how he goes by all these different names because he doesn't have an owner, right? So sometimes he'll hang out with this one family where they'll give him like treats. Sometimes he'll be with this other family, but he's no one's dog. He's like, he's just free range.
Yeah.
Like a free range chicken. And then he goes to one of the places where he gets food, which is like Luigi's, I think was what it was called. That could be my own racism showing here, but I'm pretty sure it was Luigi's.
Uh-huh.
It's like more stereotypical Italian guys.
It's Tony's.
Tony's. That sounds more... That sounds right also. That's where they have their moment where they kiss for the first time, despite it was like an unintentional kiss.
Yeah.
And afterwards, they end up sleeping together on top of a hill overlooking the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
And then the morning after, like, she's like, oh my God, what am I doing? I must go home. I'm a lady of the street now. And she's a lady. And so she, as she's on her way back home, like, they end up going to, you know, make fun of some chickens for some reason, and that's when she gets caught by the pound.
Yeah.
But yeah, but it is during that time when overnight, right, where they're little overlooking the city and stuff over the hill, the implication there is obviously they had sex. They did it doggy style.
So,
come on, guys. It's just, you can't.
Can't pass that up.
I can't.
So she's the first Disney lady to have premarital sex and have a loving household accept her for mm-hmm. it. So that's good on Disney.
Oh. Yeah, it's very progressive, like, I suppose.
Yeah, it's progressive. Yeah, good on them. Wow.
way to try to make something out of my scandal that I'm trying to bring up.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, this interracial dog accepted by her white family.
Interracial?
He was a mutt.
Tramp, you're right. Tramp was a mutt.
Yeah.
Which does mean that he, yeah, fine.
Yeah, and he was of a different lower class society. Wow, this is a really progressive movie.
You're so, well, that's the whole point of this love story, right? How love can transcend, like, class.
Mm,
I mean, that's like the ultimate thesis this film tries to make.
Yeah, if you're to really get something out of it.
Well, keep in mind, like, they both had their own stuff going on, right? She had a loving home. She had privilege.
Mm-hmm.
He had freedom.
Yeah.
All right. And they're, I mean, he's willing to throw away his freedom, I guess, to become a house pet because he loves her.
Aww. Not in the way that humans do.
Not in the way, attached. But, like, obviously so it's at the pound where, you know, Lady learns that, like, he's a fuckboy and, like, wants something to do with him. That's when Jock and Trusty come over. They're two friendly dogs. I don't know if you've ever said that, but they're a Great Dane, I think.
Scottish Terrier and I think a Great Dane. Or
a Bloodhound. He's a Bloodhound. Yeah, Bloodhound. Right. That comes into play. And, you know, that's when they ask her, you know, to marry them because, like, you know, she's in, you know, turmoil now. She's about to have puppies. But she declines and stuff, and that's when Tramp comes in to try to make amends with her, and she's just like, get out, which comes to our final scene, which is, I think, something that we haven't talked about, one of the most important things, but how Tramp ends up saving the baby from rat, because apparently the 1909 such as this rat problem.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, these households are just like, what was the rat trying to do with the baby? Does anyone know? I had no idea.
Well, usually you have situations where the milk, you know, on the mouth of the baby or their breath attracts rats.
Okay, that's the most terrifying thing I've ever heard.
Holy shit.
And there's been cases in rural areas and, you know, areas where probably low income situations where, you know, the child gets attacked in the mouth area.
Wow. Okay. Well, now that explains a lot then. So the rat was apparently trying to drink the milk from the baby's mouth. But, you know, Lady sees the rat and, you know, as she's screaming for help, but she's tied up outside. And Sarah, you know, I love that scene where she opens up and is like, shut up! Shut up back there!
Yeah, yeah, right? Putting her in the freaking house back there. Terrible.
And so, you know, Tramp comes in and saves the day. That's like when he finally wins her over.
Mm-hmm.
He fights the terrifying mouse. I remember watching this scene over a lot because And this rat was terrifying. It's like half Tramp size, first of all.
Yeah,
which is gigantic.
Big rat, yeah.
Terrifying place to live, the Midwest, apparently.
Yes. The rats are gargantuan. It's
basically a fucking possum.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, Tramp fights it. But then what happens is the Aunt Sarah, she sees Tramp, and her assumption is that, like, he attacked the baby. So she calls a pound. He gets impounded. And when the darlings come home, where the hell were the darlings? I don't remember. I think they were just out and about, as privileged people do.
Mm-hmm.
Leave the baby with a babysitter. And when they come home, like, lady is able to show them the rat. And they're like, oh my God. Oh my God.
They put two and two together.
They put two and two together. And that's when Jock gets hit by a truck trying to save Tramp from the pound.
No, the other one. Trusty.
Trusty, you're right. Yeah. Not Jock. Jock cries.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to be the end for this guy, but it wasn't.
Yeah. He lived on for another day.
Yes. They all live happily ever after at the end because the darlings take in Tramp.
So, you know, before they neglected Lady when she was one dog, but now there's seven of them and they're going to be really, really attentive dog parents now.
Also, I love for some reason how, like, Jim Darling? Was that his name?
Yeah.
Jim Deere and Darling, like, they don't mind, like, these random dogs just coming up to their house and just like, oh, we got visitors, and they open the door for them like they're people.
Yeah, yeah. Must have been a different time, 1909.
Apparently, just letting dogs just run wild.
110 years ago, crazy.
As long as they have a collar, they're good.
Yeah.
Because that's, like, the other major symbolic thing, right? The collar. Yes.
So I was telling you about Peggy Lee. You know, Peggy Lee actually contributed a lot to this film. She did multiple voices, the mother, the two cats, the one dog, who they actually, the animators had her, like, you know, pose for them, and they designed the dog after her, which was, I don't know if that's insulting or not, but
I'd be insulted if that's what I looked like as a dog.
Yeah, seriously. She co-wrote the songs with her co-songwriter, Sonny Burke, and for all of her efforts, and I think she even contributed somewhat to the storyline, like, she had her two cents heard. And for all of this, she was paid a grand total of $4,500.
Mm.
In the 1950s, was great, mm-hmm. right? And also, this is a time where movies were released in theaters, and that was it. Maybe they get a re-release. Nobody could foresee the future of home entertainment.
Right.
Many, many years later, obviously, Disney's making quite a buck over the songs that she wrote.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of them are really famous. He's a Tramp. That's a Peggy Lee song. That doesn't even feel like a Disney song. It feels like Peggy Lee. And by the 80s, she's just kind of like, this is kind of bullshit. I should have been paid, and I have gotten some of the money for those songs. So she brought Disney to court, and it took her 3 years, but she got it. She got paid $2.3 million, and now Disney has to share their profits with people who contribute to their films.
I'm sure that changed, like, movie making. I mean, that's probably the beginnings of like seeing artists fighting for what they believe is owed from the big corporations.
For sure. And Disney was just like, Disney himself was not alive. The Disney company really did not want her to have it because
Mickey Mouse is a greedy, greedy rat.
Yeah. Ha ha. Yeah. He's a scoundrel, but he,
you think they're related to the rat that attacked the kid?
I think so.
Oh my God.
I think they're all related.
Scandal.
I think he's related to Gus Gus too from Cinderella.
Chris. Oh, yeah. I think you said Chris Christie. I was just like, okay, what?
I see some similarities. But they just were like, oh my gosh, everyone who's ever wrote songs for us is going to start suing us. We can't let her win, mm-hmm. you know? So they really didn't want her to, but she did.
Hmm.
I think it was like 91 that this happened too.
Oh, wow.
Many, many years later, she got what she deserved.
Did Peggy, like, I mean, at this point, Peggy Lee must be pretty old, right?
Yeah, she was much older. I mean, not like,
I'm just saying, it's just like, what? Why?
Because it was, she was entitled to it. You're telling me that at 80 years old, you wouldn't want money you were entitled to your entire life?
For what?
For things you created when we're proud of that we're making money till that day?
What am I needing the money? I'm old.
Your children, maybe.
No.
Eddie?
Fine, maybe.
Aw.
How do you say? Well, you can't. Yeah, I don't. No comment.
So this is a pretty famous film in the Disney canon, but you know, this isn't like any of like the princess movies famous or something. There's not like a ride after it in any of the Disney parks. There's a restaurant. Sequel. There's a restaurant. Tony's.
I'm making that up. I don't know.
Is there?
I don't know.
God damn it. And I took your lead on that.
I bet you there is.
There's got to be some sort of homage. They made a sequel, direct-to-video sequel, I think in like the early 2000s.
Yes. I think it was like late 90s, maybe early 2000s.
Yeah.
But it was called Lady and the Tramp 2, Scamp's Adventures.
Really?
And it follows Tramp's son.
Oh, Scamp.
Scamp.
Wow. Okay. That's a great name. But yeah, so I guess when Disney Plus was coming out and they're like, we should have, you know, we got to have a package of things that people are going to want to see, they decided to continue along with these live action remakes of their animated classics. And they chose to make Lady and the Tramp one of the ones you got with your Disney Plus membership.
Yeah, the question is why?
Just a couple of weeks ago, on November 12th, Disney Plus launched, and with it, you could see the first not theatrically released animated film remake to a live-action CGI film.
Mm-hmm.
Lady and the Tramp, directed by Charlie Bean.
Do I know him from anything?
I don't think so.
Mm.
He made the Lego Ninjago movie.
Oh. It had theatrical release, but I don't know.
The voice actors in this film for Lady and for the Tramp are Tessa Thompson as Lady and Justin Theroux as Tramp, who is like a, like this guy is like Instagram famous for being a dog lover.
Yeah, and it's so awkward like watching this movie because like I'm on Jennifer Aniston's side with their whole thing, so.
Aren't they like friendly?
I thought they divorced because he cheated on her.
Oh, I thought they were friendly.
I don't know. According to the tabloids.
Okay.
So I can't. All right. I don't know.
You got to believe everything you hear on the tabloids.
I read. Got to. I believe most of it.
Yeah. There's also Janelle Monáe, who is Peg.
Yes.
In this movie. He's a tramp, but we love him. Pulls a new scam every day. A pretty diverse cast here. Sam Elliott as Trusty is the Bloodhound. We got a woman, Ashley Jensen, as Jock.
Yes, that's right.
And Benedict Wong as Bull. So,
there's a bulldog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then we actually get to see the humans in this film as Jim Deere as Thomas Mann, as Darling, Kiersey Clemons, Yvette Nicole Brown as Aunt Sarah, and F. Murray Abraham as Tony, and Adrian Martinez as the dog catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken Jeong as the doctor.
Yes.
So really diverse cast.
Who is a doctor
in real life.
In real life, yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this film does not take place in Walt Disney's Main Street, USA town. This takes place in New Orleans.
That it does.
In 1909.
Same
and year. New Orleans is a big character in this film.
Well,
I mean, they ride the...
It's not like New York and Sex and the City or New York and like...
No,
Rock.
But the town is very important in this film, unlike the film before it. They play to that.
Sure.
And because of the choice that they'd made for New Orleans, we see something that we didn't see in the film before. We see black people.
I'll just go right off and say it. Like, seeing a interracial couple didn't feel believable for me.
Yeah.
In 1909.
Yeah.
Because mind you, like, Loving versus Virginia hadn't happened until, what, 1967? That was the seminal Supreme Court decision that allowed interracial marriage, because up until that point, keep in mind, like, states could regulate marriage.
Wow.
So, you know, we're talking at least, what, almost 50 years in between right here?
Yeah.
And I to my understanding, even up until then in New Orleans, it still would have been frowned upon. It would have been taboo. And in this movie, it was kind of no big deal, which, sure, in a happy magical land, that's true and all.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind, New Orleans is a heavily segregated town to this day.
Yes.
Right? That's one of the major problems that plagues New Orleans. So, yeah, I you know, I would have been, I think they would have been better just doing a nondescript town.
Yeah.
That's like kind of magical, doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Giving it in New Orleans, I kind of feel like, I know what they were trying to do, but well, it kind of misses the mark.
They kind of wanted to make it more believable. They wanted it to have more of like, you know, like the musical tone of it and everything. They wanted to have this diversity and the interracial more believable being set in New Orleans. Because historically speaking, there were upper class black people who did not fraternize with lower class and were treated as white people and people who came off as light skinned and stuff. But were they married and accepted in upper class society in New Orleans in 1909? I am unfortunately not knowledgeable enough to say whether or not that was happening.
Right.
Feels like it wasn't.
I agree. I you're right. I'm not a historian. I can't say based off of the knowledge I have historically speaking of the United States, I'm going to lean towards probably not.
Yeah.
Nor do I think there would have actually been an Asian doctor, by the way.
Yeah. So the reason, I mean, this is like the first thing we're focusing on because this is one of the first things you see in the film. It has a really nice opening where it's like a painting and then it fades into like real life. And it just is like this big zoom in on the house, just like in the original. And they have the callback to the original song. Nice. And then you see the couple. We see their faces. We clearly see that it's an interracial couple. So that's one of the first things you get that's like different and like new that you're getting from it, other than the fact that they're people. And we talked about this in one of our very first episodes, which was Murder on the Orient Express, in which the remake had a diverser cast than the original did. And I felt that for a upper class highbrow train traveling, you know, with like people all over the world, I just would not believe that there would be such a diversity in there. I felt like it would be completely whitewashed. You know, like white people were able to travel to exotic Morocco and like stuff like that on the Orient, Express. Yeah. So this is another thing. I feel like it's super nice for children to watch this movie and see an interracial couple, but it's also teaching them a false history. Yeah. So it's like, what's and then it begs the question, what's more important, history or our future? The past or the future?
I would argue the future, but
we can't ignore our past.
No, yeah, you can't. And I think that's why it's just like, if you go straight pure fiction, like a whole nameless town that doesn't exist, it's all in our head, magical, right?
Yes.
Then that's fine, right? Then you can be anything they want to be. But because I think they chose New Orleans, like a real city with a real baggage of history when it comes to like racial divisions, I think it's just like, all right, either say something or don't bother. And they don't have to say anything, right?
Yeah.
I think it's just like, just give me an accurate portrayal or don't bother portraying anything.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, we're also in a culture right now where they would get fingers pointed at them had they not chosen to do this. Like, had they not chosen to show diversity in this film, it's like, oh, Disney's whitewashing again. It's interesting. They're kind of in a pickle just because it's also like of our overly PC culture.
Technically, the biggest pickle that they were in was like whether or not they want to do the We Are Siamese song.
Which they did not
do. Yeah. And I think right there already is just like a win for all Asians everywhere.
Yeah, of course.
Says a non-Asian guy.
Yeah. Jesus, how could you even say that?
On behalf of the Asian community. Yes. Well, when they saw the doc, when it was also like a bit much when Ken Jeong was there as the doctor, and I was like, oh man, this does not feel at all like this. New Orleans is in some sort of parallel universe.
Oh, yeah, in 1909. I just can't imagine there be like, I just can't imagine. Yeah. You know,
I know
in the world today, yes, but like not in 1909.
Interesting. You can't imagine about, but this is a story about like imagining, like these dogs can talk to each other and have feelings and.
It is a fantasy at the end of the day. It's like a musical where it's like, don't get hung up on the fact that they're singing because it's a musical. It's a fantasy.
True.
Like,
yes.
You know.
You know, like, for example, Hamilton is a prime example where, like, literally we have black and Hispanic actors portraying, like, historically white people.
Yes.
I mean, that doesn't bother me. But that's because it's a style. Like, it's a stylistic choice to
they
do
took
this.
A lot Here, of liberties with the truth
they're
and that.
Trying to give me an accurate portrayal of like what it was like back then, and it just feels kind of just like a fairy tale.
Yeah, it kind of feels like Disney's ignoring a lot, which should not kind of be ignored. Like, don't present to me a false reality tied up in a nice little ribbon
or an idealized like past.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But like,
it would be nice if this was the past.
Of course, it'd be great, and we wouldn't have to talk about this. But then we wouldn't have jobs as podcasters. So
yeah, exactly. And also, I kind of don't want children to like just not grow up not knowing about our terrible past, because this country's also in not very good shape right now.
True.
So you know, they can't be ignorant to this.
I agree.
So, all right,
I agree with you guys on that. But at the same time, this is opportunity to give representation. This opportunity for
I want accurate representation.
I know, but it's also a Disney movie. I get it. I know what you're gonna say. I get it.
Do you?
But no, in the sense of it's like, but it does. It's the same thing. Like, I'm drawing a blank here. But when they did, what was it? Is it Cinderella that they did or Sleeping Beauty? Where was Moesha?
Oh no, that was a Cinderella. It was Brandy.
Brandy.
That's completely different. Okay. That's straight up fantasy of a world that never existed with like magic.
And they took it to the levels of like kind of like everyone was a different, like it was like a rainbow of people. Like that was a stylistic choice that they had made in that film. Mm-hmm. Where this one,
but this one too. I mean, you had Middle Eastern, you had Asian, you had African American.
You're right. You had a lot of, but I think now I'm kind of agreeing with you. But I think it's because you're setting it in like a real place, in a real world, is kind of
exactly
where it loses that. If it had been a nondescript town, like it could have been literally Disney Magic Kingdom's America USA town, and that's fine when it's not based on anything in reality, but making it based on a real place that had a real time is where kind of just like you're kind of blurring those lines between. I mean,
yes,
they're fucking talking dogs, so like,
yeah, like
take it with a grain of salt.
In this case, you also kind of have like a historical obligation to kind of tell the truth and to not paint it in a different way, especially when it's aimed for children. Ariel being cast as black is great, all about it. This is a mermaid, this is a fantasy, you know. There's no sort of like, I see reality, I see our past, I see our country in this, you know. So it's like a completely different mirror reflection that's coming back onto us, which I think is the key part.
So when I started watching this and I saw they were an interracial couple, I thought, please don't let this be about someone's going to make a comment or they're living in a situation where their neighbors hate them, mm-hmm. or there's some prejudice or persecution going to happen. I didn't want to see that. I didn't need that in a movie like this.
I would agree with you. You don't necessarily need
that. But I did love the fact of seeing that.
And I agree.
I'm seeing a couple, interracial couple, and seeing the diversity in this movie.
I don't disagree with you. I like the fact that they were an interracial couple. I think what the problem was that they went overboard.
Yeah, they did.
It's just like, they could have literally just done an interracial couple and have Yvette Brown playing the aunt, and that's fine. That's all I need to see. And as long as you keep the rest of the world like kind of accurate. So technically, like seeing the division between the black people and the white people, technically that probably would have made it resonated for with a more coded story, but a better story here where Tramp's world is more full of more colored folk,
mm-hmm.
and Lady's world is full of more white people, because that's what we would have seen, right? That was the division of New Orleans to this day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think they had an opportunity. They didn't take it. I think they went overboard trying to like
ground itself in reality.
People who would call them out.
It did, yeah.
And I think it's called pandering.
Yes. Like, it's like I agree with Rolando in the sense where I would feel exactly how you felt had it been more of a fantasy. Could be any town. This isn't like, this is our own made up history. Mm-hmm. And maybe not even 1909 America, mm-hmm. you know, where it's just like, this is great. Now it's just a human story and it doesn't matter. But once you try and show history, different story.
Yeah, the only thing that was missing was apparently to like appease everyone was like the gay couple. You know what I mean? Like otherwise, like they cross off a lot of boxes.
Yes, they do. They right, really
so
did.
When is it not appeasing? When is it not appeasing? When you create the opportunity to show a diverse cast, we say is appeasing. Okay. And then when they don't, we really like, this is whitewashing.
That's what he said. They're in a pickle because had they not done that, they would have been fucked. But that's why it's also like, this is also the main problem with the movie is then like, okay, why did they make this movie? Just so that they could put more people of color into it? Because it's practically the same movie with New Orleans as a cast member at this point, and then a diverse cast. That's it. That's the only thing that's new about it.
I don't. Yeah, and did I don't we, have an
did,
answer
but did we need
to
that?
That question. I think that's a great question to ask. It's an important question that, like,
I think is the question that we ask ourselves, because we say it a lot.
We do.
Yeah. We say, oh, they're appeasing us. they threw in the those characters, mm-hmm. or they threw in this diversity because they're appeasing us. But then we see another movie and we're like, wow, come on.
But it's also about the context. Is that other movie historically accurate? Or is that other film about history? When this is a film that's like depicting our country in terms of like interracial relationships that never would have existed and never would have been accepted. Or, I feel like they're lying to me.
Or we're taboo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, that's just kind of ignorant. Whereas if this is a completely different, like The Terminator or something, where it's like it's the future or it's now, and all I see are a bunch of white people, I'm just going to be like, what the fuck? Really?
That's a great point. Where I for myself, didn't find myself being pandered to in, for example, The Terminator, which you guys should listen to that episode.
Yes, a couple weeks ago.
And as we said, the reason I didn't feel pandered to was because like it wasn't a big deal. Like, it was just casting, basically, and the setting. But for the most part, it doesn't feel like they were just trying to reach a certain audience. Here, I think it's just like there's like this overwhelming feeling of Disney trying to overcorrect a problem that they've been called out upon in the past before. And sometimes they've done it smartly. I think one of the best examples is Aladdin, because that takes place, granted it's a fictional land, Agrabah is still like technically a Middle Eastern inspired nation.
Yeah.
And so they went above and beyond to make sure they cast it properly. They went above and beyond to kind of give a less racist portrayal than the original one to try to overcompensate. But at the same time, like, you could argue that getting Will Smith as a black actor takes away the opportunity for white people to play the genie. But again, the genie is a fictional character that doesn't exist. It can be anything we want it to be. Mm-hmm. In Broadway, we have seen him traditionally be black, because of the vocal range, I'm assuming is why, and the style of music.
Yeah. You know
what I mean? And there's nothing, and I would argue that that was less pandering as more of it was just like trying to be accurate to what this world calls for.
Yeah.
And my argument for this is just like, this is trying to depict the United States. The United States, here's the big problem, right? As an American citizen, I am fully well aware of the problems that we are having to this day with racism.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's fine if you want to kind of look at the world with rose-colored glasses and make race a non-issue, mm-hmm. that we live in this happy-go-lucky world, but then move this story to a contemporary, nondescript time in a nondescript place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Which they could have. Like, the story of Lady and the Tramp doesn't have to be only taking place in 1909.
Yeah.
It could literally take place in 2019 in... We're watching Schitt's Creek, but it could take place in Schitt's Creek and still be the same story.
Yeah. But other than that, I mean, let's talk about why do we think this movie was made?
I could not tell you why this movie was made.
Family friendly? Dogs? Sure. Like, maybe easy, smaller budget?
It was an easy watch.
Yeah.
Like,
did you enjoy it?
Eddie, do you want to answer
that? Actually, I did. I did enjoy it. The only thing I probably did not enjoy is ladies the movements of the face. Mm-hmm. I think that was just kind of a little weird, but all in all, I enjoyed the characters. Mm-hmm. Definitely what's her name,
Peg's
character just stood out. It was very hysterical, very poignant too. It was just a good character. Yeah, I like the dynamic. I like this kind of like the evil dog catcher scenario.
Yeah, you know, way more of a prominent character.
Yeah,
getting
to, you know, getting all the strays and just that you know, to that scary thing of like you're feeling like, oh man, you know, like dogs are so precious. You know, I have a dog, and you know, you just love your dog, and you just want to.
We're watching this with our dog.
Yeah, we're watching this with our dog.
So I had no expectations for this movie because. I felt like it was just dropped on my lap. Like, it's just like, here you go, a movie I certainly did not ask for.
Yeah.
Would not have asked for. And I found myself enjoying it actually more so than I enjoyed The Lion King, which I think was one of my biggest disappointments that Disney has given me as of late.
For live action.
Yeah, the little live action adaptations. I found myself enjoying it more so than that one, despite the fact that it's basically a shot for shot remake with like
The Lion King or Lady and the Tramp?
Both. Both are basically...
I mean, there are certain scenes that are exactly shot by shot. You're right.
I mean, the only difference is just like the multicultural casting.
Yes. So that's a big difference.
A big difference that... I'm complaining about it now. Mm-hmm. But again, when I'm watching the movie, I am kind of just absorbed by the movie. And the performances from Tessa Thompson as Lady, Justin Theroux less so.
You enjoyed Tessa Thompson as Lady?
I actually thought she wasn't bad.
I hated Lady in this movie.
I actually, as someone who hated Lady too.
Yeah, I loved Lady in the first one.
Hating Lady less here.
So I'm glad you brought up the Lion King, because there's a lot of similarities in between, like, watching the animals speak and the CGI there. There's this thing called the Uncanny Valley. That's what we named the episode for the Lion King, and where it's just like, it's like this blurred line between like too much reality and just like nothing like it. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like, I was so taken aback by like when the first moment Lady spoke, I was just like, this is very bizarre. Mm. Because the reason why I loved, at the end of the day, the animation of the original film was because of the expressions the animators would draw for the dogs that we completely lose out on this, because these are quote unquote real dogs. So their expressions can only become very so much. Unquote. but then like, you know, it needs to be more like a dog. So like, you don't see the fear in Lady's eyes, or like, you know, like all the different expressions that the animator drew so beautifully in the first film. Uh-huh. So like almost like parts of their characterizations are getting lost because they look like dogs. I felt like the portrayal of Lady too was trying to relate to me on like an awkward 2019 kind of like girl, and I really did not like that aspect. Like,
really?
Tessa, when she was cornered by the dogs and she was like trying to scare them off and stuff, I was
that wasn't her fault. That was like, this is like another moment where I think the original one kind of beat out, because in the original one, Tramp comes in and like kind of fights these three dogs.
Well, I think that Lady was a more accurate portrayal of like what a dog would be like, and that, and just like a totally sheltered, innocent, scared dog. Mm. I don't know. I felt like they tried to bring in this kind of like contemporary mindsets and dialogue with between the two dogs that I just like was not feeling personally.
Interesting. I don't know if I felt that way.
I definitely, I was just, I don't know, something about her delivery. I really did not like Lady one.
I thought Tessa Thompson was good.
I thought all the other dogs were great.
I did not like Justin Theroux that much, to be totally honest. I don't know why, he just doesn't read as the Tramp for me.
Yeah.
He read a little too, his voice sounded a lot more handsome than I think the Tramp. Tramp should be a little like more fuckboyish. Although, is Justin Theroux a fuckboy?
What is the voice of like a fuckboy?
What is the definition? Yeah. Oh,
I know what a definition is, but what's the voice? I just want to hear.
Justin Theroux? Oh, what's the voice of
a fuckboy? Do your impersonation of a fuckboy.
That's a good question. What is, I feel like, that's a good question. You've stumped me. I think a fuckboy, his voice just sound like someone who smokes cigarettes,
I do an impersonation of a fuckboy?
Go ahead.
Okay, Lou. I'm like, yeah, no, Eddie, why don't you come over? Yeah, no, I'd love to see you. Let's spend the night together. And then the next day, try and talk to me.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, I'm really busy today. Sorry.
You're right.
I had a flashback.
I think a true fuckboy nowadays doesn't really talk. They just text.
Ghost you.
Yeah. Or, and then ghost
all of
you.
That through text. Yeah. But like, just plays it up, tells you everything you want to hear, and then the next day it's like, who are you? So I guess you're also, maybe Justin Theroux had like too much sincerity in
his voice. Maybe.
Perhaps. The one thing that they did add was they gave like a scene where you see when the Tramp was abandoned by his family, and that was so sad.
Yes, they gave Tramp an origin story. Yeah. Did I need it?
No.
No. Did it help me understand Tramp a little more? A little bit, actually.
Yeah.
I will say that. Like, because Tramp in the original one was kind of just like, he was all about just living wild, young, and free.
Yes.
And this one was more about like, humans are bad and they're going to break your heart.
Well, let's talk about the humans.
But he also was about living, having the adventure.
Oh, no. Yeah,
definitely was.
Free. Yeah. Absolutely.
But let's say that. Let's say that.
Yeah.
Too. And because then it gives him depth. It's like he's saying this, but that's not what's really going on. He's a broken dog. His heart is broken. Mm. The people that he trusts the most, people that he felt loyally connected to, has betrayed that trust. And so he's like living this life and he's doing what he got to do. And I'm being alone. It's because I'm being alone because I can't trust again.
Yeah.
Like if I'm alone, no one can hurt me.
Which feeds into his whole mentality of like, trust. I only trust myself. Mm-hmm. I look out for number one, me. Mm-hmm. And that is what actually more so introduces the conflict between the two, their relationship, right? Because Peggy and the other dogs make Lady believe when she's at the pound that it's because Tramp works solo that like you got caught. So
they took out that element from
the whole element of like Justin Theroux's tramp being a fuckboy. They took out the whole element of premarital sex. How dare they, Disney?
They fixed that.
You call that fixing, I call it ruining it.
Well, you know what they also did is that they really changed the humans in this film. So in the original film, in the beginning, right, they did not want Lady in their bed. They were like, you have to stay here. And then they finally caved in. Whereas in the original, they were nicer. They're nicer in the new one to Lady.
They're way nicer than
the new one. In the first one, Lady gets smacked.
When she gets smacked?
Like when Lady wants to play and she's like, no, Lady, no. And she's like throwing the yard and then she keeps going. Yes, and she's like, no. Yes, and then yes, she like gives her, and she's like, it didn't hurt. But like she never hit me before,
right?
And like
I remember that now.
They're again, not awful God, humans.
What a whiny bitch! I get to say that. It's so fun.
Would you appreciate if you were being smacked by someone you loved?
I grew up with my mother.
All right, yeah, we shouldn't ask that.
No, it wasn't child abuse, guys. It was just like
just like stop.
South American women.
Yeah.
From that culture. No. Well, Latin.
No, I've been Latinx
women. Like yeah. I would say, like. Like we were raised a certain way. Like our mothers tend to like hit us when we're misbehaving. Yeah. I wouldn't call it abuse. It's just like that's just their way of parenting.
Well, that's why I actually appreciated the dog parents in the first one, because I'm like, they seem like normal dog parents. Where at times dogs get neglected. You know, they just don't become the primary focus. And sometimes you do get so frustrated with the dog that you kind of just want to like give them a thing.
I mean, the truth is like sometimes like you know. I've had to do, it's the most heartbreaking thing when you have to like discipline your dog.
Yes, it is. Like, but you have to.
For example, when my, Bobby, when he used, we gave up on this obviously now because he's just like a man set in his ways. But, you know, when he used to pee a lot and stuff, like our go-to is just like you push their snout into the urine, right? And then you got to like give him a tap on the nose. Be like, no.
That's abuse.
No, it's like, what's it called? It's training, isn't it? Well, at least it used to be the way that the train, you know, it's a generational thing, right? Like, you're just like, obviously, yes, I don't think that's, we don't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. But that used to be the way in which people train their dogs.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just thought that they were more realistic. I thought the newer parents were a little too nice.
I mean, to be honest, like,
it was happy-go-lucky land, seriously.
Haven't you ever told your cat, don't do something, and then, like, they do it, and you're like, all right, whatever, you give up.
I kick my cat out of my room when she stops listening to me. I'm like, you don't get to be with me anymore.
Oh, that's called harsh love. That's abuse. That's emotional abuse.
I let her in like, an hour.
Oh, so you don't-
That whole opening scene of Lady and the Tramp is me and my cat, by the way.
Same with me and my dog. It's just like, you know, when we first got our place, like we were just like, you're not going to be on the couch. You're not going to be the couch. He owns our couches.
Yes. Like, I love animals so much.
You know?
But also Aunt Sarah, not as much of a cunt in this one, but still pretty. And it's like, I feel like the comeuppance that everyone wanted Aunt Sarah to get in the original, she gets in this new one where they're like, you're never going to watch the dog again. Bye. And they slam the door on her. You know, like they actually treat her like the cunt that she is. Really, which is also kind of
that word loosely,
unrealistic. I love that word so much. I get to say it though.
Yeah,
but yeah,
fair.
This film kind of, I don't know, the whole New Orleans thing, certain things being expanded on, just the lack of emotional depth I felt like from watching, like I said, quote-unquote dogs, it kind of was a miss for me. At the end of the day, too, you know, like you said, what, like we said before in the Uncanny Valley episode of The Lion King, it was a shot-for-shot remake. Why did we need this?
Yes.
Why? Lady and the Tramp, we got things that were historically inaccurate that were quote-unquote fixed in this movie, and just kind of like a nice tied-up little package as this movie that feels just kind of like I'm being pandered to and lied to about reality, and then nothing else changed. Everything pretty much stayed the same.
That's not true. We got rid of the Siamese cats.
And the Siamese cats. We just got two
Siamese.
Other cats.
Were they still Siamese cats?
No, they weren't Siamese. They were just like two cats of the same.
They were just nondescript cats.
And they sang
cats.
A terrible song.
Oh, the song is so not good. So upset. I do love the sequence. Again,
that's
always a cool sequence of seeing the cats like messing up the house. But the first one, because that song was so good, also makes that scene so much more memorable.
Yes.
Where this one, the song is just kind of like,
it's not good.
Blah.
Yeah, it's forgettable.
Yeah.
And again, when it's live action, it's like, you really, Aunt Sarah, you can't see that your cats did this? You're stupid. And they made her more of a cunt, because when they took Lady to the store, She was the one that suggested the muzzle, not the owner. The owner in the first place.
No, no, the owner was like, oh, what a beautiful dog.
Technically, yeah. Hey, Aunt Sarah recommended the muzzle in the first one, too. She takes lady to the store, and her first words is just like, I need a muzzle for this dog.
Yeah, well, still, it was just like, Jesus Christ, poor thing. That's so sad.
I mean, you know, like, Aunt Sarah is a lady set in her ways. I think, actually, to be honest, Aunt Sarah might be the only character who I think showed prejudices against an interracial couple, because she did not like Jim Deere.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that might be the only historical accuracy that there might be.
Yeah, no, maybe. But I don't think it's about him being white. I think it's about him being a musician.
Yeah, because white people can't play music.
And then...
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my God.
I'm joking. That's a joke. No.
No, I'm really glad that like it's only hinted at, and we're like kind of discussing maybe it is, maybe or not. They didn't go with that, because this film, at the end of the day, even though they changed the race and kind of like made us question about it, like, this film is not about race, you know. This film is more about class, which sometimes is even like people are blind to race when it comes to class, because class is so powerful.
Yes.
But back to the whole, why was this movie made? What did I get from it? And I feel, you know, Rolando and I kind of feel a little pandered to. We feel really like this wasn't like what we want from representation. We want representation. I'm speaking for Rolando when I say this. And did we feel like we got that in this movie? I mean, I really feel like this was just Disney just thinking that they gave us more of what we wanted. And I actually feel kind of, I'm going to use the word insulted. Like, how do you really think I'm just going to like eat this up? Mm. You know, Bob Iger went on statement saying that, like, we need to fix these old films. We need to revamp these new films, these old films, for a new audience. You know, they're dated, and that's why he's doing these things. And it's like, I prefer the dated film. I'd rather see this 1955 portrayal.
I don't disagree with him, though. I agree that, like, some things need to get fixed.
Yes.
But I think the problem is, like, when you just steer too much into the fixing, that it just becomes itself problematic.
Yes.
Right? So the original portrayal has problematic elements, but fine. We can accept that the fact that they are, what's it called? They're relics of the time of their period. Time, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Here, this overcorrection is going to itself become,
you're right about that,
what's it called? A relic of our time. This is going to become something where I think in 25 years, 50 years, when they're remaking these new ones, they're kind of trying to figure out, hopefully they'll figure out which is the right way to steer. Because the truth is, there just might not be a right way to steer. And it's just like, hopefully in 50 years, we'll have figured out that we're supposed to be doing original stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Go ahead, Eddie. You were going to say something.
I think sometimes within that process, we may oversteer a little bit or overcorrect. But it's the fact is that at least there is a process. At least there is someone saying, we need to look at this. We need to reevaluate. We need to portray something different, because I do not want to see any more princess movies where she is waiting for her man to come and save her. Because this is not, when I have my own kid and I have a daughter or even a son, I don't want that to be the mentality, that the way I could be a princess is I'm going to be weak, or I'm going to be defenseless, or I'm going to wait for my prince to come. It's not the reality that I grew up or saw in my own household. So definitely the need is, I want my Snow White maybe to be a warrior.
But it's interesting, because we don't want more of the same, but we do. We want more of the same done differently. We want it remixed. We want it. So it's like, I don't want to see, you know, another historic, like a film about just a bunch of white people. But at the same time, you know, I want it to be something that I'm familiar with and that I can get comfortable with. Like you said, I don't want to see another princess movie. I want to see a warrior princess movie. So I want to see Snow White, but I want to see her as a warrior. So it's like this really interesting moment too, where it's like, we're not getting originality. We're just getting the same stuff redid, because it almost seems like maybe that's what people prefer. Like, at the end of the day, maybe we did want to see this Lady and the Tramp. Maybe we did want to see what they would look like if they were actually quote-unquote dogs. And maybe we did want them to fix these things. Maybe we did want a Lady and the Tramp without Siamese cats. I personally don't agree with Bob Iger. I personally think that these films should stay as what they are, relics of time. Like a 1955 it encouraged you to look up history and be like, what was the Asian community? How were they represented in 1955? You know, it stands as something that's very accurate for its time. And just like this will stay for like, oh, remember in 2019 when it was overly PC? Mm-hmm. You know, I think things should just, when they're flawed, that's actually even better because it encourages us to be aware of history and it encourages us to be like things from the past, kind of just like keep it in the past, which is the title of one of our podcast episodes.
Yes. Which episode?
I think it's Power Rangers.
I think you're right. I think it's just keep it in the past.
So it's just, it's interesting too, because I think they're like, it's like this weird, like we want it, but we don't want it thing. You know, we want more of the same and that, but we want more of the same done differently. And it's a very interesting time. And I'm so glad we have this podcast to discuss these things and like how we're digesting it.
Hollywood has never known what we wanted though.
Well, I mean, truth be told though, a lot of people think that this is new, but come on, films have been remade and redone since the 30s, before that. You know, this is the tale as old as time, to quote Disney.
That's a quote, Lady and the Beast. Oh,
Beauty and the Beast, which Lady and the Tramp, Beauty and the Beast, same shit. My girlfriend and I, we were watching the movie last night. She's like, let's turn off Beauty and the Beast and go to bed. I'm like, we're watching Lady and the Tramp. She's like, are we?
It was so funny because I was making that joke all this week.
Should we do a lightning round?
We could do a lightning round.
Lightning round.
Lady.
I don't like either of them, but I'm probably going to go with Tessa Thompson's.
100% Barbara Luddy in the 1955 Lady. That lady has my heart. Mm. I loved her. We're like on such opposite sides when it comes to that dog. Tramp. Ish. Probably the original.
I'm going to go with the original one too. I prefer the original one as well.
Because he's a tramp. He's a tramp, but I love him.
Yeah.
That sounded more like Peggy Lee. I got to redo that beginning. He's a tramp, but I love him. All right, sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do my jazz voice.
Nah, that's fine.
The
Cats.
Siamese
Cats. I'm going to go, the racist portrayal of the cats for sure, just because
it stands out more.
And it's a way better song.
More Peggy Lee.
Did you prefer a female jock or a male jock?
I guess I kind of like the female jock. I liked her portrayal. At first, when I saw the original jock, I was like, oh, this guy. And then he just started annoying me.
Oh, I thought he's so adorable, the original one.
He just, when he needed to, he didn't contribute. Granted, he's not like a search dog. So like he couldn't use his nose to track the scent like the bloodhound did. He was just kind of like standing there watching. Mm-hmm. I was like, be more useful.
Mm-hmm. And which trustee do you prefer?
The original. I love that voice actor.
I think Sam Elliott's
trustee. He did a good job.
It was pretty good. I think.
Yeah.
Rewatching it, I might go with Sam Elliott's.
Okay.
Yeah.
The big ones that were Jim Deere and Darling. Who did you like better?
The original.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I like the original better. Yeah. I got a good one. The Rat. Which Rat did you prefer? The original one or the new Rat?
I guess I'll go with the new one. He had a really? Bigger role.
Yeah. No, I'm going to go with the original one. The original one terrified me
as
a kid. It
was very scary. Those red eyes.
Yeah, the red eye. It was like half the size of a tramp, right?
Yeah.
This one was tiny and it felt like less threatening, to be honest. Like if I saw my child like being attacked by that, I'd be like, oh, it's just a mouse. Stop.
True. No, wait. The one to end all is who's the bigger cunt of the Aunt Sarah's?
Oh, the original.
The original was such a bitch.
Yeah, she's... Bad lady.
Bad lady indeed. Mm-hmm. I don't even think the Jim Deere and Darling just knew how bad she was.
No, she didn't.
Which is pure evil.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all for Lady and the Tramp.
That is all Lady and the Tramp.
Yeah, what a dog. But yeah, so do you guys like Peggy Lee? Did you like these movies? Let us know. Hit us up on our Instagram. At Remakes, Reboots, Revivals, or Facebook at facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals, or send us a beautiful email, our podcast name at gmail.com.
remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
Yes.
Just want to make sure people know that. But yeah.
If you didn't know, that's our podcast name. Thanks again, Eddie Z. This was a lot of fun today. We all had. Who would have thought Lady and the Tramp would have got such great conversation out of us?
The truth is, just like Disney, these Disney remakes for sure are constantly going to keep bringing up this specific conversation.
100%.
Race, identity politics, and gender politics. You know, I think that's why we enjoy covering them
for sure. Yeah, so you will see us next for Mulan, or maybe Dr. Doolittle. That's Disney.
Oh, that's not like Disney.
Yeah,
not but like Disney, but whatever.
We're excited for it to continue the Asian depiction in Disney movies with Mulan. But until next time,
stay unoriginal.